Hello and welcome to the Unmissables podcast. Did I say Unmissables?
You said Unmissables, but the Unmissables
podcast.
That's
a good start. Yeah. I'm Boyd Hilton. I can't say Unmissables. That was Steph Seelan.
Hello.
And this is Kay Ribeiro.
Hello.
We together will trawl through the world this week of television. Sometimes, recently we've done some films. Every now and then we do a book. Once maybe we did a song.
we did an album.
Yeah, did we?
You talked about Morrissey as well.
Yeah, that's true. It's still the world's foremost pop culture podcast, yeah. I'm saying.
It is.
Who's going to disagree with me in this room?
No one.
Today, we are going to look at the hugely expensive new Netflix science fiction epic, Altered Carbon, which is going to drop next Friday on the Netflix.
It's going to arrive.
Plonk. Sorry, plonk.
We've only been saying for the last 50 episodes.
It's not technically true, Kay, but no, let that go.
Yes, we don't. 41.
I've told you a gazillion times to not exaggerate, Kay. we're also reviewing the new BBC. Some are calling it a psychological thriller. Others are calling it a murder mystery drama. Others, like me, are calling it a horror. Oh. It's Requiem. And it starts next Friday as well. And it's also plonking because the BBC is making all six episodes available in one binge go, as is their wont these
modern
days.
Yeah.
Which is controversial in itself.
Why is that controversial?
I've seen people saying on the Twitter, like TV experts, saying, why are they doing this? Like, they show shows once a week in serial form, and they also put it all of down there. Like, what's to be gained? What's the advantage of that? And I think, I kind of hear what they're saying.
No,
it's like one or the other, isn't it?
I think actually it's like mental torture if you really need to know what happens.
No, because that is an act of learning discipline.
I
think the BBC are doing, they should be set themselves apart from the streaming networks that do it.
I agree.
Otherwise, what is their point of difference?
I think I agree with that.
I think both of you are wrong.
I think they feel they have to do it. To be all trendy, but I don't really think they know why they're doing it, and I don't think they know, you know, it's affecting. Obviously, it affects the ratings of their own shows. It's slightly cannibalistic.
I tell you why Auntie's doing it. Auntie's doing it for people like me to get me off the Netflix, so I'll watch these things on. So I will go.
Auntie
on
doesn't
BBC.
Realize you'll never get off the Netflix.
No, yeah.
Well, I'm going to surprise you maybe this week.
We're looking forward to that.
She's had a net. It's been discontinued. You've not paid your subscription.
Down.
It's been like a discontinued. It is. And finally, we're going to review the new Saturday night BBC entertainment music talent show Search called All Together Now, which stars, among other people, Jerry of X Spice Girls fame.
I think it's a stretch to call it entertainment.
Spoiler!
Steph,
come on!
Spoiler alert.
Okay.
I might get John to edit that out.
Ooh.
No. Sorry.
I think we all know that's never going to happen.
It's never going to happen, no. Now, before we get into that meat of the podcast, we do like to have a little discussion about what else we're looking at or reading or listening to. And I like to start with Steph.
Yeah. In my usual slot of what I've been watching on Netflix this week, you will be surprised to learn that I've rested Netflix for a week.
What?
Yes, I
Why?
Have. Because I was sick to the back teeth of you two telling me that I couldn't watch anything else but stuff that was on Netflix. So here are the things that I've watched this week. I finally got round to watching Get Out, which is now on Sky Premier.
What is Get Out?
The film Get Out.
Oh, right.
With Alison Williams. And what is that guy's name, the main guy?
Daniel Kaluuya.
And it's still in it's still in contention for some awards this year, isn't
Oscars,
it?
Oscars, yeah.
Yeah.
Is nominations it, out next week, yeah.
Is it still? So it must have been one of the first.
Yeah, it's one of the earliest.
Yeah, the early ones.
Yeah. Which is interesting because normally it would affect its chances heavily, but I think it's getting a little bit of ahead of steam.
Yeah.
Because this year, it's very open, the Oscars this year. So I think it will be nominated for Best Picture, and I hope to God he'll be nominated for Best Actor.
He's absolutely brilliant.
Yeah,
it's okay. If you don't know anything about this film, basically it's it's original in its complete randomness, okay? So basically this African-American guy starts going out with Alison Williams. Alison Williams takes home to meet the parents.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
His
parents,
yeah.
You know parents are like obsessed with African-Americans, and it all goes absolutely effing crazy in there. But it's amazing.
Yeah, I remember this. Actually, we reviewed it, didn't we?
Yeah,
so you can catch that on Sky
Den
now.
Of Geek. Is it Den of Geek? I think it's Den of Geek. But the district did a poll of their readers of their favourite films of all time, and it was like number three.
I'm not surprised. It
and
was
number five, and it is a brilliant film, and number five was the Mad Max Fury Road, which of course is one of your favourites.
Oh, well, that's obviously wrong.
I'm going to write this down. Now, is it Get Out or is it Get Out! Exclamation mark.
Get Out!
Yeah.
No, there's no exclamation mark.
No,
just Get Out.
Get Out, Steph.
Bloody hell. Right, Get Out.
Well done, good work.
Okay, then I've also, on Sky, are you guys still watching How to Get Away with Murder?
No.
Right.
No.
Shonda Rhimes, How to Get Away with Murder, the fourth season started. Oh, so, so good. So if you haven't been watching it, please go and watch all of them, because I'm not going to give away. But there was one of the team died at the end of last season, and it was a big, big shock. And now it's how they're going to move. They're going to move on from that. And somebody's pregnant, and it's Frank's come out of hiding. It's absolutely brilliant. But it's a Shonda Rhimes classic.
Steph, are you excited because How to Get Away with Murder is going to merge with Scandal in a.
What?
Yeah, we had it in your Boyd's TV column in the magazine. Yeah,
I mean,
Hold on a minute. How to Get Away with Murder is going to do a crossover.
So Kerry Washington.
Yeah, with Scandal. That is going to be second only to my favourite, as I think I've mentioned before, Murder, She Wrote and Magnum P.I.
Yeah.
Which was called Magnum on Ice, the crossover. Yeah.
And if you read my TV land spread in Heat magazine, you'd have known.
Boyd, I cannot tell you any more times. I do not read them, okay?
She doesn't read.
If you did, you would have known about this. Carry on.
Wow, when's that going to happen?
Soon. I think I've got a feeling it's going to happen towards the end of the season.
Just got a feeling.
They filmed it.
Oh my God, what's the matter with you and your words?
Okay, well, season four, there's three episodes available. It's on Sky Living now. It's fantastic. Right. And BBC, right? I've been watching live TV. Stuff that's just live, and it's called Surgeons at the Edge of Life.
I love that you're calling. Do you mean stuff that's just on a given day that you watch it? You're
live
that?
TV,
or is it actually live, filmed live?
No. Like
you
stuff
mean,
that's
as it
on.
Goes out, like to normal people, and then on the schedule, on the linear schedule, you watch.
So when you
it
get
live,
in,
yeah, in
when you get in and you turn the TV
not,
on, it's stuff that's on yeah, then.
This
right,
program,
so it's not live. Okay.
No, you don't watch Surgeons live. Doing operations.
Listen, you never know.
I mean, it's
way forward. It is. Okay, so Surgeons at the edge of life, which is. They've had two episodes on. It's on BBC. Started on the 15th of January. It's brilliant. Oh, you see things getting removed. I mean, you actually do see them doing surgery. Oh my God.
Is it like
casualty? You see huge like tumours getting removed. It's amazing. And these incredible surgeons like talking about like some of these people are literally like it's Last Chance Saloon. Actually, one of them's called Last Chance Saloon. It's not one of the patients. One of the episodes is called Last Chance Saloon.
Mr. Last Chance Saloon will have you now.
That'd be unfortunate, wouldn't it?
It'd be really depressing.
Fingers are removed from Last Chance Saloon.
It's fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. Mm. Hour long, BBC.
One or two.
Is it depressing? Ultimately depressing.
It would be too much for you to ask of me to remember if it was BBC One or Two.
It'll be on iPlayer. So
I think it's
matter.
On
you're
iPlayer.
Right.
And then...
Was it depressing?
No, it was really uplifting, and I just, God, surgeons are such clever people, but it also gives you a bit of an insight to their kookiness.
Endorsed by Steph.
But it gives you a little bit of an insight, because like, the music they play when they've got surgery, like these 8-hour surgeries and how they're like, ribbing each other.
Like
all
in
the way
Doctor
through.
Strange, you know, I mean, Doctor Strange, where he insists on playing like certain hits from certain years, and like he knows.
You can bring anything back to Benedict Cumberbatch.
Yeah. Or did House. House used to live
yeah,
listen,
how?
Right?
Mm, yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Anyway, and finally, I can inform you that I have started watching Happy Valley, and you are right. Sarah Lancashire is very good.
This is like with Kay's classic West Wing, where she when Kay watched. We've mentioned this before, have we? Well, Kay watched
only
the West
100
Wing
times in the 100
about
episodes
10 years after it went out. I mean, Get Out was a little bit of that because that was like pretty much February.
So probably
last year.
Get Out.
Yeah. And, but certainly Happy Valley is like two years late.
If I can't be the only
good
one.
Good for you, GFY.
But you know what? That was on Netflix. Happy Valley was on Netflix.
Oh, so you lied to us. Okay. So the original disclaimer that you haven't watched anything on Netflix was an outright lie.
But I just remembered, and I thought it was more important to tell the pogs out there, people on the ground, that actually Happy Valley, if you, like me, hadn't watched it, it's on the Netflix, and Sarah Lancashire's very good.
Good call. Kay, what have you
Hi,
been
guys.
Up to?
She's been reading something, because it's probably got a merchant in it. Well, it probably has. Tell me that's not true.
A merchant.
If you call Trump a merchant, well, actually.
Oh.
So I've been reading Fire and Fury. Now, I'm not going to go on too much about it because obviously Boydo has discussed it because he chose to listen to it rather than read.
Oh, lazy.
No, but that's fine. It's every bit as good as Boyd said. And I know like Trump's thrown kind of shade on it and questioned the veracity of it, but I just think it's so obviously based in fact. And if you... Like I, a bit obsessed with the whole administration, and like every morning, pretty much, I wake up, check Twitter to see what the hell he said next. Then you're gonna love this book. It is so fascinating, Steph. You got to read it. or listen to it.
Are you obsessed with the administration? Because for much of your life, you've been compared to Condoleezza Rice.
That is true.
Pogs,
yes.
I'm going to put up a picture of Kay and Condoleezza Rice, and then you can judge for yourselves how much she looks like her.
And so Malala.
She doesn't look like Malala.
Do you know what, right? The whole Condoleezza Rice thing came about because one of our former editors, Mark Frith, brought it about as a comparison. And so much so that Nick, our postroom guy, heard it, thought it was really funny, and called me Condoleezza Rice for the last, I don't know, 10 years, but now starts shortening it to Condi. So he'll be like, morning, Condi. Like, you do know that's not my actual name, don't you?
It is now.
Yeah. Anyway. So yeah, I read that. Also, I took your suggestion of watching Up, Steph.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Oh.
It was very emotional, you're right.
Did you cry?
No. Heartstone.
I really don't understand at all. You didn't cry Up.
I mean, like, no tears actually fell. My eyes.
Boyd and John both were like,
well, yeah, but they're both babies.
Yeah. Don't take that, John.
Scathing.
Don't take that.
No, Boyd, I
mean, yeah.
I was more emotional
at
Coco. Also, I've watched Kiri. Now, are you up to date with it?
I am saving that for the weekend, so don't tell me a single thing or I'll punch you in the face.
Okay. Well, I've actually illegally galloped forward and I've actually watched the finale, which I'm not going to talk about at all. No. The final is on the 31st of Jan. So can we, after the 31st of Jan, can we safely talk about the finale?
Of course.
On the pod? Or do you think we need to leave
after
it
after it's gone out on TV?
I think
we can, yeah. I mean, no, we're not going to spoil it. We're not going to spoil it. We can just...
No, because I want to talk about the ending.
Oh, well, if you want to spoil it, you'll have to give the listeners a warning. That
you'll have to
it.
Get written emails from everyone saying that it's okay.
All the pods?
For you, every single one of them.
There's millions of them. I can't email them
all.
Well,
that's what you have to do.
Okay, well, it's a very bold, thought-provoking ending.
Okay.
And finally, Portrait Artist of the Year.
What?
Yes. Steph, it's so good. You've got to watch it.
I know, I've watched it, but it's not a new show.
No, but it's a show I'm watching.
Oh,
I'm
sorry.
I'm so sorry. I thought the segment was the stuff we've been watching. Sorry,
Mrs. Happy Valley.
Was it only new stuff? Because
no,
Get Out didn't seem
that
new.
But I just mean, like, that's the kind of... To me, that's like saying, oh, I've been watching This Morning
Happy Valley.
With Holly and Phil. Do you know what I mean? Or, like, I've been watching...
Right.
Okay, well, sorry.
Could this be the segment when Steph's an arsehole? I just don't know.
Out and out swearing this week. Out and out abuse.
Sorry, isn't it like the 13th series of Portrait Artist of the Year?
No, it only started in 2000.
Okay,
it's like the third or fourth, I think.
Please accept my on-air apology.
Okay.
You've been watching Portrait Artist of the Year.
no, so I watched it last week and it had... so anyone who hasn't watched it, it's on Sky Arts Tuesdays at 8 o'clock. And basically a bunch of artists are divided up into three groups. And each group paints a famous person. And then the famous person gets to choose which portrait they want to take home. And then the judges decide which person will go through to the final.
Who did they paint this week?
So last week.
Sorry, last
obviously
week.
Obviously, I can't predict. They did James
can,
Ward. I know.
We get the information.
Don't offend her.
It's
James. I've riled her.
It's a rile. It's a rile.
The cage.
Yeah.
Is James Morrison, Michaela Cole, Boyd's friend.
Well, and, yes, I interviewed her this week. Yeah.
And David Tennant.
Yeah. And David Tennant.
Mm.
Doctor Who.
Yeah. It was really good.
it's my official title,
second favourite art programme to Watercolour Challenge, which I still hope will one day be brought back.
Oh, Watercolour Challenge.
Hannah Gordon.
What about Art Attack? Hannah Gordon. Oh, she's great. Art Attack was fantastic.
Art Attack's good.
Or what was Tony Hart?
Heartbeat.
What was that called?
No.
Heartbeat. Was it called Heartbeat?
Heartbeat. Now, Heartbeat was the 50s set detective.
Hold on. No, what was it called?
Yeah, Heart Attack.
No. No. What was it called with Tony?
Heart to Heart.
What was it
Boy's
called?
Doing a Google.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, so yeah, Portrait Artist of the Year.
Take Heart.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah, Vision On. Take
what?
Heart. These
no, it
were the
wasn't.
Things. Vision On was the first thing. That was a children's show that he had his own slot on. But his own show was Take Heart. Oh, he did have Heartbeat as well.
Oh,
how about
well
that?
Done, Kay.
A second on air apology, is that?
First, what's the other thing I've got?
No, second directed to Kay.
Oh, right.
Just into she's counting them in total.
Yeah,
we're
okay.
We're not
do you know
individuals.
What? Not only was Heartbeat the name of Tony Hart's thing, it went for 10 series.
Oh, see? Yeah. It was brilliant.
That's
I loved it.
That's a big moral victory from Kay.
I absolutely really loved it. And he wore that cravat and looked very fetching.
Yeah. Very fetching.
He did look fetching.
He did. Mm-hmm. He had that blue smock. Mm. Anyway. Boydo, what have you been watching?
Oh, thanks, yeah. Well, I've been watching... Did you mention last week, Steph, the David Letterman show? Or am I imagining?
No, I didn't, but oh my God.
Yeah, so my next guest needs no introduction with David Letterman.
You talked about it, because you said that Obama was on it.
No. Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee, also available on Netflix.
Oh, okay, sorry.
I might have said that it was about to come on. Or
that's okay, apology. Okay, there's been an apology from every single person.
No, actually, I don't want to say you guys are wrong, but I believe he did mention it, because I said, oh, that's what inspired me to get Netflix. But anyway, listen, as you were. Carry on.
Did I actually, like, had actually watched it.
What are we meant to do? Rewind
no,
it?
You didn't watch it. You hadn't. No.
John, had I watched it? That. Do you remember? Don't think
John
know.
Doesn't listen,
so
much to listen to this. He literally just uploads
well,
it.
Well, anyway, it's there and it's brilliant. So I'm not going to give too much detail in case I went on about it last week.
You didn't go on about it last week. It's legendary David Letterman. You haven't
legendary
gone on about
David
it.
Legendary David Letterman. Back. One guest a month. It's a monthly show. So Netflix has gone from one extreme of like having 10 episodes in one go to having one show a month, which
quality.
Is quite extraordinary.
Quality, not quantity.
I love it. But it's kind of admitting on their part that, you know, it's not the be-all and end-all isn't delivering everything in one go, isn't it? Which it isn't.
I think it's good that they're doing that, recognising that.
Anyway, it's a fantastic. They get on so well. It's like they're, you know, they're kind of friends, and the way Obama talks about taking his daughter to college is the best bit. Have you heard about this? That he took his daughter to college, and he was so like trying not to deal with the emotion of it.
Yeah.
And so he tried to fix her lamp, and he said that it took like 20 hours to fix his lamp. He was trying to focus on it and like not deal with the reality of the situation. That she was going off to college. Yeah,
what
it's really,
a great man.
It's really good. It's brilliant. And it is like you sit there watching it and you think, oh my God, you know, we've gone from one of the greatest, most dignified people in the history of the world to this idiot. So that's that. Yeah, my next guest in his own introduction with David Letterman. And I also saw the film Ghost Stories this week, which isn't out yet.
Okay.
It's out soon in cinemas near you. Have you seen either of you seen the stage play of Ghost Stories?
No.
So it was
a
stage play created by Andy Nyman and Jeremy Dyson. Jeremy Dyson of League of Gentlemen fame.
Mm-hmm.
Andy Nyman, actor, writer, magic expert.
Great guy.
Great guy. All around great guy. And they've directed and written the film version. And it's really, really good. It stars Martin Freeman.
Well done them.
Well done them indeed. It stars Andy Nyman himself, Martin Freeman, Paul Whitehouse, and it's a compendium. So the idea is that Andy Nyman's character is this skeptic. He doesn't believe in the supernatural or ghosts or anything. And his whole thing is he's got a TV series that, you know, explodes the myths of these people, investigates kind of fake mediums and that kind of stuff. And he is told by this mysterious old Scottish guy, that he's got three ghost stories that he knows actually happened. And so he goes off and kind of interviews these people who feel they've had their own supernatural experiences with ghosts. So you've got these three really scary individual stories with Martin Freeman, Paul Whitehouse and Andy Nyman. And then on top of that, there's a kind of enveloping whole kind of device that keeps it all together, which is also scary as well. So it's kind of multiply really, really scary. It's one of the most effective horror films I've seen for a long time.
How scary is it on a scale of Get Out being scary?
Well, Get Out gets really scary, doesn't it? I guess Get Out is the old jolt, doesn't it? And then the climax, spoiler alert, is pretty scary.
I might watch this.
Yeah, but this has like scares throughout, right?
Oh.
All the way throughout.
Persistent
scare. I was sitting next to this guy who I believe works at Mojo Magazine, one of Bauer Media's.
Yeah.
He literally leapt out of his seat so violently that he knocked me out of my seat as well.
Oh my God.
He was yelping.
Did you shake him and say, get a hold of yourself, man?
I slapped him.
Right too.
It was really funny. There was a room full of, you know, seasoned film critics and people were yelping, jumping.
A bunch of losers.
Oh, not for me. Yeah. I can't handle that.
They were scared. So keep an eye out for Ghost Stories when it comes out soon in cinemas.
Excellent.
Yeah. And I've contributed to my friend's horror podcast as well.
Who's your friend and what is the podcast called?
It's Mike and what's it called again? I always forget.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Evolution of Horror.
Your good friend Mike.
Because ghosts are the theme of this whole series. So last year was Slashers. And
you've done that before, haven't you?
Yeah, did Slashers last year.
It's called The Evolution of Horror.
Yeah, that's very good.
What did you talk about?
I talked about this thing called Ghost Watch, which was an incredible one-off thing that was on BBC years ago in the 90s.
Oh my God, Ghostwatch. Yeah. That was amazing with Sarah, what's her face?
Yeah, Green.
Sarah Green. Oh my. Do you know what? I still believe that's
Sarah
true.
Green. What, Sarah off
Yeah, no, well, honestly, no, I do. So don't say it wasn't because I still believe it to be true.
I mean, it was a drama written by.
No.
And directed by.
Stop it. No. That's a part of my childhood that I would like to remain intact.
Well,
thank you.
We don't listen to my podcast.
No, I won't. I won't. You just put me off.
Sarah Green from Breakfast TV.
Yes.
Yeah.
And Mike Smith,
her husband.
Do you not
remember that? It was a huge phenomenon. It was huge.
They're both in it. Michael Parkinson hosted it. It's incredible. They all play themselves and they are all brilliant.
It's an absolutely amazing documentary of something that's very scary that happened one night.
Yeah.
It's fascinating. And we'll say no more about it.
Look it up. You can get it on DVD and stuff.
VHS.
More importantly, it's time
for some reviews news.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah.
All right, Kate, if you insist.
Boyd, you're not going to be happy about this one because I believe...
Wait.
Go on.
I believe I've confirmed.
Go on.
Yeah. Wait. So I'm happy to announce we've now got 63 reviews. Woo! So
Boyd is rocking back and forth in his chair.
Like he's in an asylum. It's fine. You'll be all right, Boyd. Okay, so I just wanted to mention one person particularly, Sally Macon, gave us 5 stars. And she said, you know, the whole podcast is very funny and entertaining. And she's found some TV gems by listening to us. Now, Boyd, she said she's loved listening to you on the radio for years. So I was excited to find out about this. And now she's a fan of me and Steph.
We're stealing your fans.
Good.
And listen to this shout out for Steph. Look at her, she's so excited. I almost can't bear to read out. No.
Have by any chance you heard this already?
She might have done. Okay. I have.
P.S. I'm with Steph. Absolutely hate dystopias. Far too stressful and miserable.
Mm-hmm. You're going to love this week's
I know. This
Sally.
Week's show. Hey, Sal, you're going to love it.
Sally, yeah. We are kindred spirits. I've told you, I'm going to start the Viewers Against Dystopia, or VAD, and that. Me and Sally are founder members.
Thank you, Sally, for reviewing us. It's very kind of you. Now, I had a proposal, Boyd, which I haven't told you about. So, you know, on this continual drive to get more reviews.
Your obsession, yeah.
I mean, it is actually, I've got to be honest. Yeah. I've got RSI from refreshing the screen so much. But, I think we should aim for 100 reviews, right?
Obsessed.
Boyd, we can do it.
Now, you've got the choice of either us trying to do that by the end of the year or, as Steph suggested, by our 1 year anniversary, which is in April.
Which of those would you like?
What do you think? And I think if we don't hit the target, we've got to have something really...
Give up?
Yeah, that's okay. It. We'd stop doing the pod.
No!
Yeah, no, if we don't get
that
by
Sally?
April...
What about Sally? Sally
will find her own entertainment.
What about Cedar Master? What about all of our
All right, well,
people?
Something else. Something else will bad will happen.
If you want to bow out after...
All right, I'll resign.
No, I'm joking.
Right. No, we'll get 100 and I'll go.
No.
By the end of the year or by April?
Neither. I'm not sticking with that. We're not going to give up the podcast because we haven't got enough reviews.
No, we're not going to do it. But what would you say? Like, should we challenge ourselves to get them by April or get them by the end of the year?
Just challenge the world.
Yeah. But give me a date.
April.
April. Woo.
Oh, God. The pressure is on.
John says it seems unlikely, but...
Yeah, his words were, guys, I think that's a bit ambitious. So yeah. I'm here to prove John wrong.
If you two want to prove John wrong, please duplicate your reviews.
Our number one hater, podcast producer, John.
Boyd, I'm ready. Boy,
oh, right. Boy, is that it? Is that the
I
only
don't know about you,
reading?
But I'm ready for some meat.
Yeah, is that that's the only review you're reading out?
Boyd, I've chosen
that's
to
only new one.
I'm sorry, it's only one.
Last week we're on 62, we're 63. You did the maths.
Okay.
That was the one.
That April date is going to have to be revised.
It's not. Pogs, just a quick one before we go on to the meat. Spread the word. If you like listening to us, even if you don't, just tell all your friends to listen to us.
You could just have it on really low in the background. You don't actually have to listen to
just
what we
Just let
say.
It play. That's
it's
one
free.
More listen.
It's free.
It's free.
Yeah, I mean,
it's free.
It's free. Get in touch with us at Boyd Hilton, at Steph Seeland, at Kay Ribeiro. And more importantly than that, just bloody review us on iTunes. Thanks.
Okay.
The meat. Moving on to the meat.
Boyd's like done. He's just, it's over for him.
Apologies to vegans, but it's time to move on.
For some spam.
Altered Carbon is the new Netflix series that, rumour has it, is even more expensive, or as expensive as The Crown, which was previously the most expensive show. And even the star, Joel Kinnaman, out of Suicide Squad and House of Cards, he played the other presidential candidate in House of Cards, the one that hasn't been, he's the actor who hasn't been disgraced in House of Cards.
He is.
Unlike Kevin Spacey, he said, and I quote, "They're really going to be able to create a world that's got a bigger budget than the first 3 seasons of Game of Thrones," which is a very specific thing to say, isn't it? When you're an actor in a thing, it's even bigger than Game of Thrones. You're throwing down the gauntlet of bigness.
Yeah.
You're saying this is a big epic thing. It's 10 episodes. It arrives all in one go in Netflix style. It's adapted from a 2002 novel of the same name by Richard K. Morgan. It's set 300 years into the future, Steph, and it is, isn't it, a dystopian one?
Let's just put our head in our hands and say this is utter nonsense and terrible.
Oh, I was going to have him explain the plot. I just wanted you to confirm that it was dystopian.
She isn't finished.
Hold on.
FFS.
As all dystopian things are. Okay. Boyd, please continue.
Let me. I'm volunteering to explain the story. So I have a feeling that neither of you really want to go.
I was going to point blank. Refuse to do that.
The complex setup. So the complex setup is 300 years into the future. The big thing that's happened in this world is that human consciousness can be stored digitally in implants called stacks, so that people can upgrade their bodies, which are then known as sleeves. So really rich people, if they're killed, they can just, their consciousness can be preserved so that they'll move on to just a new body. They'll look different, but their soul and all their memories and everything that makes them who they are still remains, albeit now looking in this different body. So the idea is effectively rich people can live forever, albeit in a series of different bodies, whenever they die.
Sounds like that could definitely happen.
That's the concept. And the show focuses particularly, it's also a murder mystery, so it focuses on an ex-elite soldier named Takeshi Kovacs, who was once a killer for hire. Then he rebelled against the kind of the dystopian people who are running the world. He was imprisoned. 500 years later, he's woken up, given a new sleeve/body that looks, it's Joel Kinnaman's body, ripped Joel Kinnaman, who I have to say is naked throughout and with an extraordinary like 8-pack. Buff.
Gratuitous that's bum undeniable, shot peeps. Isn't it? Mm.
Who I think he's also an exec producer. That's interesting. he is given this new body, and he has been woken up because very rich dude Lawrence Bancroft, played by James Purefoy, wants him to solve his own murder. He has been murdered by someone because he's so rich. He's moved on to another body.
Sleeve.
But he needs to know who the hell, which one of his wealthy friends, or maybe even his wife, who's very acting very suspiciously, I feel, wanted him dead. That, and then it will, across these 10 episodes, we'll get to see Joel Kinnaman's character investigating this murder, meeting all these different unsavory characters and trying to work out who killed this rich guy, forcing him to go onto his next body/sleeve. And at the same time, you're immersed in this world of the future, 300 years in the future. You've already laid down what you think of it, Steph. What did you call it? Terrible, abominable.
Awful.
Why didn't you like it? Weren't even interested. You weren't interested in the concept. You weren't interested in the characters,
Boyd.
In the world. What's your
Boyd,
problem?
I'll give anything a go, even when you throw me something that you know I'm going to hate. And I thought, I really want to try and like something dystopian, okay? But
that
it just confirmed everything I believe about dystopian things, that they are shit. It is so awful. Right. Okay. The lead, okay. He is...
Joel Kinnaman.
Right. He's got very good looking, okay. But he... Not even... Hold on. Not even he is good looking enough for this terrible script. It's terrible. There's too much going on. Mm. The violence, you're not really sure why people are coming into his house and shooting at him. There's too many kind of layers to the story. He's completely uninteresting character. The supporting cast around him are also terrible. It's a total, and I know that you will think this, Blade Runner ripoff. It's just like everyone's gone, let's just throw everything at this and just see what happens.
It does.
It's awful. It is just so bad. I think this is going to be Netflix's biggest flop. It's terrible.
Big words. Big
Netflix
words.
Netflix should ask for a refund.
Big words.
It is awful.
As for the Blade, yeah, the one of the main issues with it is it does look and feel a lot like Blade Runner. So it's set in this, there's a lot of like, there are shots of this big cityscape in the rain, a la Blade Runner, with flying cars, a la Deckard in Blade Runner's famous flying car, rising up above the cityscape and flying off into the misty distance. I mean, the shots that pretty much could come straight from Blade Runner. Even then it gets down to the nitty-gritty on the street, if you like, where he meets the people on the ground in 300 years into the future. And there you get these shots of, for example, like in the like red light area, in the dodgy area, and there are women thrusting their naked breasts in the general direction of, which again looks very incredibly similar to Blade Runner, the original, and even more so Blade Runner 2049. Now, I think this must have been filmed probably the same time as Blade Runner 2049, so we can't complain about that. But it does unfortunately suffer from the fact that it even has big ads, doesn't it? It has those big ads, kind of speaking ads.
Yeah, speaking out.
So much, which of course, the original Blade Runner did brilliantly and kind of did predict, because that is happening now. In fact, if you go on the tube, there's a big
talking poster. Yeah, people are speaking to you. It's really weird.
Yeah, that has completely happened. So it really does. And I was so fascinated by the fact that it felt so much like Blade Runner. And I was like, this can't be. This is almost weird that they didn't go. That at some point, someone didn't go, hold on a minute.
What does this remind you of?
So I thought, all right. So I went back to look at to look on the internet about the original novel. And I read a review of the original novel when it came out in 2002 that said it was a lot like Blade Runner. And I thought, isn't that weird? So people accuse the original novel of being derivative of Blade Runner.
Right.
So in a way, maybe they've kind of stuck to the original novel in terms of adapting it, and it is a lot like Blade Runner.
But hold on, because what we know about you is you are a huge Blade Runner fan.
Yeah.
So obviously you must have loved this then.
No, because if something's derivative of one of your favourite things, you don't necessarily mean you like the derivative thing. I didn't hate it, right? I had issues with it. The obvious Blade Runner derivation issue was almost extraordinary to me how much they did. They could have avoided, you know, maybe the original novel has a lot of things in common with Blade Runner. Then hence, surely in the visual version of it, you know, when you're making the TV version, surely the production design should have come together. They would have sat together and gone, right, let's try and avoid it looking exactly like Blade Runner.
Why? Because haven't they seen how successful Blade Runner is and thought, we'll have a slice of that pie?
Oh, but honestly, it's like, no. It just feels like, why watch a thing that's, you know, not quite as extraordinary and visually stunning as the thing you're kind of mimicking, aping? It seems pointless to me. I don't feel it's... you're saying it could be, you know, deliberate, almost a deliberate kind of tribute, but it doesn't feel like the way to me. It just feels to me like more of a rip-off than a tribute. So there's that issue. I have to say the first... So I've watched a few episodes.
Okay.
So you've both watched...
I just watched my eyes, it was a struggle to take.
So what I would say is, episode. I think the first episode is very badly put together. I think it is a mess. Because it's got to establish this world. It's got to establish this idea of the sleeves and the soul, the stacks. It's got to establish when it's set. It's got to show you his character, what he used to be like. So these quite confusing flashbacks to the original version of the Kovacs character, now played by Joel Kinnaman, then played by another actor, Leonardo Nam, in fact, is his name. It's got to introduce you to the mystery a bit. So it's very dense, isn't it? It's very... And I think there's stuff in it that feels... they didn't need to have certain scenes. Like when he goes back to this motel where he's staying, which is like this...
awful.
I thought it was all a bit... Yeah, it was all
And
a
you
bit.
Don't know what... And then there's a guy who comes to that hotel. There's...
To
so violent.
Yeah, and you're like, why is that happening?
Yeah, you don't know anything about this guy. It's just...
It's a lot to deal with.
It doesn't establish at all who he is.
So I feel the first episode should have been completely streamlined by someone.
Yeah,
someone
I
should
totally
have come
agree.
In at some point and go, look, this is too much.
I still don't think it would have made it good.
And I wonder whether, almost because of the Netflix thing where they know that all 10 episodes arrive, they think, oh, well, viewers are going to watch it, binge watch it, so we don't...
They can clarify everything.
I feel in this day and age,
You can't rely on people doing that.
No, I agree. But I think that's my main explanation of why they felt it was okay to have this very dense and confusing first episode. I think they need to think more about the fact in this day and age, if you're watching the first hour of a thing and by the end of it, you don't feel, I've got to carry on watching
it. Yeah, don't invest.
You don't invest. So I carried on watching it because I thought I have to. And it does get better. So episode 2 is much more streamlined. And it's all about him. He's now investigating this murder. And he's going to various people and literally asking them what they know. And it feels much more conventional, really, as a murder mystery, albeit set in the future. And you're not worrying so much about the kind of confusing premise. And he's walking around naked half the time, which I think is so funny because he clearly thinks this is a big bonus of the thing that I'm going to show my butt and my 8-pack. James Purefoy walks in completely naked at one point. You're like, oh my God, knob out and everything. God. You're like, oh,
no,
well done, James.
Knob.
Yeah. And he's
Netflix
you know,
knob.
Netflix,
oh.
Purefoy
Can
knob.
Can we stop saying
Goodness.
Knob?
But Purefoy is like a, you know,
really?
he's a.
Oh,
know.
Worse. That's worse. I'd rather say.
Oh, admirable effort. And there's lots of female nudity. There's an extraordinary amount of full frontal female nudity in episode 2, I have to say. And you think, well, at least it's equal opportunities nudity now because you've got James Purefoy frontal as well. So that was almost like. They've clearly decided we're going to make this as adult and as daring nudity-wise and swearing-wise and violence-wise as possible.
Sounds like Blood Drive.
Almost in a Game of Thrones-y way. You know, this is our really violent thing.
Yeah, but isn't that also because the whole thing is like they're just sleeves and they're incidental. Oh, yeah. The bodies are incidental.
It makes sense. Yeah, it you're right. And it is actually, logically, it does work within the confines of this premise. You have to have this rampant nudity. You're absolutely right. So you can't... Mm. It doesn't seem as gratuitous as you might think, but it does come across as I think, quite gratuitous. But I have to say, by the end of episode... And I even got into episode 3... It does get better. So I'm actually, I have to admit, I'm quite enjoying it now, even though... But, so, yeah, I know, you're both horrified.
Oh, it's so rubbish.
And UK
well.
Haven't had a chance to say anything. So that's what I think.
Let rip.
What do you think?
Maybe she loves
it. I absolutely love this.
No,
not really. I just didn't care about the central characters, which is problematic, right? And then also, I just felt like the storyline was so complex and bewildering that kind of took away from my enjoyment. Plus, by the time I had got to grips with the whole you know, I was going to say bollocky, the whole bloody...
The whole bollocky.
The whole bloody sleeve and stack business. And the whole concept that if you smashed up the stack, then, you know, the person would be dead. And I was like, okay, right, do you know what? I finally got to grips with this. And then this person said, I quote, have you ever heard of a full spectrum DHF remote storage backup? Right? And that made all the rules that I just heard obsolete. Great and I line. Thought... I was like, no, I thought I'm out. If I've just understood all the rules of this complex, you know, thing,
and then someone goes,
actually, but this is the get out clause, and then everything you've just understood is coming. I was like, do you know what? No, not
yeah,
from what.
Fair enough. It's funny because talk about the characters, I do think it's a problem. Like, even the characters feel Blade Runner-y, so I'm going on about it, but you know, Deckard in Blade Runner, the big question about him over the years has been, is he a replicant or is he a human? And so Harrison's full performance works because it's slightly stilted and almost cold. It's like a chilly performance, you know. And in this, Joel Kinnaman's doing a bit of a similar thing. And you think, well, that's fine, but it just feels like a not as good as Harrison Ford character, not as interesting a character. And there's this woman, there's this kind of femme fatale woman, the wife of the rich guy, who's also a bit Blade Runner in her performance.
I've never seen Blade Runner, and I just thought she was very stilted.
Yeah, but everyone's kind of acting in a very... heightened,
exaggerated way.
James Purefoy also, like, apart from getting his knob out, he's also, everyone's kind of being very heightened, I'm being very sci-fi. It's all a bit much, it's all a bit try-hard.
They've all let themselves down. Especially Joel Kinnaman, because I love him in House of Cards.
He's great in House of Cards, yeah.
He's really let himself down.
Yeah. So all I would say is, I hear what both of you are saying, like, and I don't disagree, but actually, I probably will carry on watching it now.
No, you won't. How many more have you watched A Blood Drive? Because you said you'd carried on watching that when we both hated it, and I don't believe you've watched any more of that.
No, I didn't watch any. Right, okay. That's different. But Blood Drive was a romp, was a ludicrous romp. This is, you know, it's a huge, big, epic thing. So I feel like if I'm invested this much, I might as well carry on. I mean, I'm not saying I'm going to leap to watch it all in one go. I'm just saying I probably will eventually catch up with it.
I don't know about that. I think Steph and I both judge you over that.
But in the Netflix world, it's definitely not. It's not going to be a Stranger Thing. Do you know what? It's not going to be an OA. It's not going to be a cultural phenomenon.
It doesn't deserve to be on Netflix.
Ooh. That is bold. It doesn't.
But think of The Get Down, for example, which was a massively expensive series. You know, that one.
Yeah. Will Smith's son.
Romeo and Juliet director. Yeah. And Will Smith's son. And was kind of... That was a lavish thing. Baz Luhrmann, thank you. And that was kind of, I think no one really watched that and they didn't recommission it for a second series. So they do have their moments where, you know, apart from the obvious huge hits, they do have their moments where
it's good that
they're
innovative and try new things.
Oh, yeah, I mean, they're commissioning like 50...
And when I say try new things, derivative things.
Right.
I don't want them to use my $7.99 a month for this kind of thing. I just
Steph, as if you're paying for the service that you're streaming.
Well, I just hope that Mr. Netflix is listening.
Dear Mr. Netflix, please stop now with this show.
Wonder how many stars you were going to give it, Steph.
One star. Ooh. And that one star is just for the Netflix platform, which I love.
The logo.
Boom.
Yep. Ba-dum. Netflix. Okay.
Oh, my God.
That was a good estimation of the tone of the Netflix.
Yeah, it was good. God, I was going 2.5.
You're being generous.
That's more.
But I think that's taking into account the kind of lavish nature of it.
The waste of money.
That's purely for that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not for that line that I quoted.
No.
Okay.
Oh dear.
I'm going to give it 3.5. Yeah.
It's rubbish.
I'm going to carry on. Unabashed.
Good for you.
That is Altered Carbon. Just so for yourselves, as I often say. Arriving in
and
fall.
And let us know if you agree with Boyd. We might do a poll. I mean, that's never going to happen. So either tweet and agree with Boyd or tweet the right people, Stephanie.
Tweet.
And let us know.
Tweet.
If you hate
what
it.
You're saying.
VAD. So viewers against dystopia.
Really, you're really hoping
Hashtag
this,
VAD.
You're really hoping this becomes a thing, aren't
it
you?
Is going to become a thing. Me and Sally.
Sounds like an STI.
No, it does.
Anyway, carry on.
Yeah. Altered Carbon is on Netflix, as I was trying to say, next Friday, the 2nd of February, in full.
So find something else to do because you won't want to stay and watch that.
Fair people decide for themselves.
No, try it.
Same day. 9 o'clock on BBC One, Requiem starts, and it also will arrive in full by the end of that hour, or six episodes. It's a bit of a binge. I may turn to Kay Ribeiro. We both went to the screening of this, didn't we?
Yes, we did.
On a rainy Monday morning on the south bank of London's fashionable Thames.
Thanks for the ingot, guys.
No,
thanks,
Steph.
Thanks.
Basically, I went because our good friend Rich Kane, lovely PR, invited me and Boyd. And also, I'm not going to lie, I thought I was going to be in line for a nice coffee and a croissant. Now, those two things didn't happen.
Oh.
However, and also, I didn't realise that this was a horror. You know, my worst. Oh. Yeah. So that was
first world
two great surprises for me.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't get my croissant.
Yeah, I know. Sorry, I'm being a dick. But
I had the same experience recently, which I was going.
I know, you moaned to me about it. Yeah.
Exiles. thanks, Channel 5. Yeah, just, coffee. Just a water. I mean, anything. Anyway.
Dangerously dehydrated.
Dangerously dehydrated during the X-Files screening. Yes, so, Craig, what is Requiem all about?
Okay, so it opens with a man who's like, he's going through some kind of, I'm just going to read your preview, Boyd, because it's very well written, and I liked it.
Okay. Well, don't you? I won't have read it, Boyd, just so you know.
No, because it didn't. You won't ever read it.
I liked it because it didn't give away any spoilers, and I think it's important for this one, because, right, so a man is basically going through some kind of intense trauma as he's strolling through his massive mansion, and we don't know quite what's going on, but he ends up on his roof, and in front of his gardener, he jumps off, right?
This happens in the first 5 minutes, so it's not a spoiler. It's Boyd's favourite phrase. Go on, Boyd.
Premise, not spoiler.
Yeah. And then we cut to seemingly like unconnected young cellist called Matilda Gray, played by Lydia Wilson. And she's just about to do this solo performance with her best friend, Hal, who's played by Joel Fry from Plebs. And suddenly a massive personal tragedy occurs. And you're kind of like feeling really sorry for you, don't know what's going on. And then in the same breath, she suddenly discovers some documents that allude to a disappearance of a young girl 20 years earlier. And she wants to kind of like go on this hunt, this Welsh village, and find out exactly what happened, because she feels like she is somehow connected to it. And we meet all the locals who live there who are very like hostile towards her, except for one guy, this young Australian played by James Freshville, and who's inherited the mansion from the old man that we see at the beginning. And that's where it picks up.
That was an excellent non-spoiler description.
Thanks. I mean, thank Boyd, really.
I was reading with his words.
Boyd Hilton. From my preview. Yeah. She'll never read. No, you don't need to read it.
Don't need to.
No.
She doesn't read.
So you were the only one who wasn't there Monday morning.
No.
In the unrefreshed.
I was here eating a croissant.
Yeah.
Oh.
Do you agree with me? So my feeling about this is I'm excited because I'm a big horror fan. I feel this is horror. This is a horror TV drama.
This is a thrilling horror TV drama. And it is absolutely amazing. Oh. So amazing, right, that I became so obsessed with it. I've watched the first three. So there's six.
Oh, wow.
There's six. And what I'm going to do tonight is go home and watch the next three because I have to know what happens. It's so compelling. Right. You know how I always talk about how, like, when I say, there's these characters that are flawed, but I don't care about them because they're not very nice people, like I did with Hard Sun, that apparently people liked, but I thought was terrible. Anyway, Matilda's character, she's like this very flawed woman, but she's got heart. And so she's like kind of unlikable in one sense, but still I really care about what happens to her. And so I, without giving too much away, after you've watched the first one, after every episode, they kind of reveal something else and you become so desperate to know. But I absolutely love the horror aspect to it. So there's mysterious music being played and there's a few mysterious things that happen that are actually real classic horror devices, aren't they?
Yeah, noises behind doors, locked doors.
Yeah, and locked doors you can't get into, not even locksmiths can get into. And just like little trinkets that they find and things like that. And it's just, I just thought it was absolutely breathtakingly brilliantly filmed. I loved it. I love all the characters. I think it's
directed
absolutely
by Mahalia Bello.
I think it's genius to have the guy from Plebs in it because he brings very much needed light relief. Kate, I feel you're going to agree.
No,
with me?
He brings much needed levity
because otherwise,
and the chemistry between the two.
Oh,
it's great.
Yeah, I absolutely loved it, and I think the Pogs are going to really, really love this.
Can I tell you something? Hello. So obviously, I walked into the screening not having read anything about it and not have had a croissant. And I sat down with Boyd and suddenly I was like looking through the press release and it's like horror. And I was like, oh my God. So then I was trapped, right, in this darkened screening room next to Boyd. But not only that, we had Joel in front of us and we had Brendan Coyle behind. So then I was in this situation where it was so scary and I was so jumpy that I had to put like my scarf up in front of me and try and act really like, chilled out about it, even though I was...
Did you see the first one at that one?
Mm.
Oh. Well, you're right. We're here now, so you seem okay.
She's recovered.
Yeah. No, it was properly scary though. And but it's a testament to this. I still want to watch all the rest of them because it's brilliant. I think she's great because she's got this kind of like androgynous look and like otherworldly quality to her.
She's really fascinating. I don't know what it is about her face. I totally agree. There's something special about her.
She's got a great hipster look, and she's got kind
blonde
of that
fringe.
Very what's that hair color called? Like white. Blonde almost, is it?
Ombre.
Grey. Is it?
Grey. So it's like grey blonde.
It's grey blonde thing.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, is that a special hair colour name?
Oh, I don't know.
It's like hipster blonde.
Thank you. Hipster blonde.
Yeah.
And a great teal coat.
Yeah.
Good use of teal.
She's very got a ghostly appearance. Something ghostly about her, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes.
So, yeah. It is very scary. I'm just Pogs, be warned. It is a bit. It's scary. Makes you jump. It is violent, but it's worth sticking.
We don't want to give any spoilers away, so it's hard to go into specific things that happen because
I think the less you know about the story, the better.
I agree.
All the way through, because you're seeing it through her eyes. It's her as she discovers stuff, as she tries to find out about what is her connection to this girl who disappeared. What's going on? What is all this happening with this family, with this village? And she meets the boy actor. He was in front of us as well in the screening. He's very good. You're going along the journey with her, aren't you? And I think that's why, because even though she can be a bit difficult. I mean, she has just suffered a huge trauma.
Yeah,
but she is.
I don't think she's that. Is she
difficult?
There's
one in episode two. You haven't watched episode two yet.
I haven't seen episode two.
She's a bit horrible, isn't she? Too.
She's a bit mean.
She's had a lot going on.
But there's this great. One of the other things I loved about it is not only Joel Fry is absolutely fantastic and
he is brilliant,
he's lovable because he is very wry and funny all the way
so
through.
Funny.
But he's clearly obsessed with her.
Oh,
so they
God,
have
yeah,
this.
Of course.
They're best friends, but he wants more than that from her. And there's these just subtle little moments where he's like looking at her and she's not interested in him at all. And there's a moment in episode two where he's like being really nice and sweet to and sportive
God,
and she's like, and she's like, no, F off. And it's like, oh, you absolute.
I know.
But
she's gone through a lot.
That's probably the last
thing on her mind.
But I think it's totally real. I think it's totally real. So they don't soft soap her character. She's not like being nicey-nicey at any point. Mm. And there's another thing that happens in episode two, which is interesting, isn't there?
Yeah.
We won't say any more about it. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah.
It's gritty and it's real.
But the character who plays
the
mother.
No, not the second episode.
Oh, yeah.
She is.
It's not gritty. She's gritty. Yeah. The whole show is incredibly kind of, is beautifully filmed, I think. And
who's the woman who plays the mother? I can't remember her name. What is that actress's name? The woman who plays the
Claire
mother.
Claire Rushbrook.
The mother of the child that went missing.
Claire Rushbrook.
Amazing.
Fantastic. Yeah, she's always brilliant. You'll recognise her. She's been in loads of great stuff. Yeah. In fact, she's in something else at the moment. I can't remember what that is. But she's great.
Yeah.
She's really good.
She's great in that as well.
Yeah, she really is. And Joanna Scanlon's in it.
Yeah.
As the mum. Brendan Coyle from Downton is in it. He's got a great cast.
He played Bates.
Bates, of course.
Master Bates.
It is really good. I think it is. And I'm really excited that there's a horror. Now, it could go either way, because I don't know. I haven't watched all of it. None of us have.
No, but I'm going to finish it tonight.
It could be a ghost story. It's kind of the way it's being set up at the moment. It's a ghost story. And there's a lot of supernatural stuff going on. But actually, it could, in the end, somehow solve all that. Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
It might not be. It might all be in the people's minds. You know, you don't know.
But
I hope, though.
I don't want it to be in the mind.
I want, in the end, it to be a ghost story.
But you said at the beginning you didn't know why the BBC were dropping this all at once. For me, I am so desperate to see what happens that I think people will watch the first one and become so gripped that they will be like, right, I've got
to
find out what happens.
Have the patience to wait.
They won't do that, Kate.
Oh, yeah, no, I can see why. I didn't
mean
that
way. For something like this.
I know it makes sense. It makes sense in that point of view to give the viewers what they want. I'm saying I feel like strategically, I'm talking
point of
about,
difference.
I feel, exactly. I feel like for me, for channels like BBC and ITV and Channel 4 to go down this route of dropping stuff in a binge watch as a new series arrives is oh, I don't get the strategy
but
of it because it's cannibalising
like
their own ratings, their own view. So, you know, if you can watch it all in one go, right, you might do that. But they're still showing it once a week for 6 weeks. So it's like either, you know, for me, it's like doing both is odd. And I know Sky's doing it as well. And Sky, it's slightly more, it makes more sense for Sky because it's not, you know, it's a commercial channel and they don't care. They don't care about overnight ratings, for example, but the BBC still does. So it's more like that's what I'm saying. I don't understand why.
I don't think they have to cater for people like you because you've got Netflix for that.
But I want, that's what I'm saying. So in order for me to still watch stuff on the BBC, they need to have that function. Because otherwise I won't do it.
Oh, so you're saying it's like for the kids and you.
Yeah, I am. Yeah.
For the youngsters who won't watch live,
who
as you
demand,
call it.
Who won't watch live television.
Linear TV.
Yeah.
You have to have it. Oh, that's
you
interesting.
Have that
maybe
option.
You're right. Maybe that's what, that is why they're doing
no,
it.
They should start, no, I think they should stick by their guns.
I'm sure you're right. I'm sure they feel they have to keep up with the Netflixes and the Amazon
they
Primes.
They do.
And have, but I'm not sure if young people like
no,
are
that's what I'm saying. I think her older audience watches BBC.
That's exactly. But they're all going to die, and then who's going to be watching the BBC? God. But that's what I'm saying. That's exactly my point. It's like when all those people die off, you've got to get these young people who are used to watching TV in a different way back to watching BBC.
BBC will always have Strictly and stuff like that. It's fine.
They can't just run Strictly forever. Yeah, maybe on one show.
Well, I'd love if they could.
All right. Okay.
Anyway, Requiem, whether you watch it in 1 6-hour binge or if you watch it on a weekly serial basis on Friday nights on BBC Two, starts next Friday, the 2nd of February, 9 o'clock. And how many stars, K, are you giving it?
Oh,
Yeah, star rating, yeah.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Don't try and duck out of it now.
Did you say, oh, that's a good one? I mean, we do it after every review.
I'm going to give it 4.5 stars.
I think I'm going to give it 5.
I'm thinking of giving it 5. It's a 5 star.
Finally, this is a show that will not be binge watched because it's going to be every week on BBC One for about 6 weeks.
This is a show that will not be watched.
God.
Stop spoilering everyone.
Come on, let's build up the dramatic tension.
Yeah, go on
spoiler
then.
Steph.
Sorry.
All Together Now, hosted by comedian Rob Beckett. It's a 6-part entertainment series for anyone who believes their voice could win them £50,000. Do you want to explain the format, or do you hate it so much that you don't?
No,
I
hate
it.
So I'll just run through it really quickly.
What's the 100? Explain that.
Okay, so the 100 is made up of singers, people from the West End, singers, performers. 100 people, like there's a guy on there who's like a Brit school teacher, vocal coaches, all people in the entertainment industry, but they love singing and they sing professionally. And then there's also Jerry Halliwell. I'm just going to say
Horner.
Now, Jerry Horner.
Horner-nay.
Okay. All these people sit on a huge wall as a panel of 100 people called The 100. And behind them, there is a light. So they're kind of on a backdrop of a light. Some poor, not unsuspecting because they've said they're going to be on the show, singer.
Auditioner.
Comes out and sings in front of these people. And after... I think it's, is it 20 seconds, 20, 30 seconds or so?
Something like that. 10?
If
20?
The group of the 100 people like what they hear, they stand up and then their light behind them will change colour. And it means that they're kind of voting with their feet and also they're voting with their voice because they start joining in, hence it being called All Together Now. Right. So
it's a very thorough explanation.
Okay.
It's good. Yeah.
I'm just going to say now.
No, but there's another element.
Yeah. So then what happens is they'll get a score. So say someone will get like 25 people stand up. Then they go and stand on a little podium. And then throughout the course of the show, other people come on and sing. And if they knock them off, if they get a higher score. And at the end, the person who's got the most votes goes through to the grand finale. And then the other two people have to battle it out in a sing-off.
Yeah, Sing a different song each. And then they have to see how many of the 100 people stand up
and join
in.
Yeah.
But the key device, isn't it? The gimmick of the whole show, if you like. So what if it's like there's a constant... If you see, modern television, it's one constant talent show after another, which it kind of is. On Saturday and Sunday nights. Then the twist of this, the big thing is they've got this panel of 100, as you say, and that's how they measure how they're going to do with the number of the 100 who join.
Yeah,
just to slightly reiterate what you're saying.
Yeah,
that is the key gimmick.
Yeah.
Slash format.
Format.
Okay. Now, you clearly, you're already negged on it.
No, well, listen, you know how I feel about Jerry Horner Halliwell. Okay?
No, what? No, I don't know. Oh, no. We didn't know you had an objection to Jerry Horner Halliwell.
I don't think that Jerry Halliwell should be... if you take 100 of anything...
Yeah, make sure we don't get sued and stuff.
No.
Just as your legal advisor.
Like, John's going to have, like,
as your
of
legal advisor,
fit.
What to careful what you're going to say. You're not going to accuse
look,
her
he's,
of,
look,
like...
Look, he's giving you the padding to bear.
All I'm saying is...
We're all on 10 Turks.
Take 100 of anything. I don't want Jerry Halliwell to be in charge of it. That's all I'm saying. I just don't
but
want
she
to.
Was on that dog. She was on that dog program.
And what did I say? Jerry Halliwell was a real low point.
Did you say that?
That's what I said.
I don't think she said that.
I did say that.
Let us delve into the mind of Steph Seelan.
Oh, okay. God.
Is there a Ricky Whittle style reason why you don't
Here's
like Jerry Halliwell?
The thing that annoys me about Jerry Halliwell, right? I don't like her. She talks all the time. She's too earnest. It really aggravates me. She's just like, it's like she makes. She just like makes out she knows everything about everything, and I just find it so irritating.
Are you going back to the time where she did a documentary for the BBC in which she went to, I think it was the world's biggest dump? Do you remember that?
Yeah,
and she kind of like Jerry Halliwell saves the world kind of thing. I wrote
a dump.
Yeah, it's a big work of rubbish.
You know, it's part
tip.
Of her UN work.
Yeah,
she went to a tip. She went to a tip where like
Croydon,
where poor little children have to like pick things off the tip to eat and stuff like that. It was awful.
Yeah, it's awful. Yeah, but she was presented with that. I wrote a Heat cover story about that. Believe it or not, because it was so remarkable.
Yeah, I just find her. I find the whole thing like. She doesn't sing anymore, okay? I mean, sure, she sings in her house, which must be irritating for everyone.
Doesn't she have a single every now and then?
Look at me. I can't get on board with her.
John's
I can't get on board
head.
With her.
John is a huge Jerry Halliwell fan.
I just can't.
I think
I'm
it's
sorry.
The same. She'll come out.
And I find when she... I'm sorry. I find the people getting up and dancing incredibly cringy and horrid. Sorry. Carry on. You say what you think. It was just awful.
Okay. Do you disagree?
Here are my notes. Okay, things I'd like to talk about. I think, a bit like that Sky programme, singing programme we reviewed on the pod, that which didn't have as many...
The one where they were all harmony singers. Was it called?
A cappella one.
Yeah. Cat Deeley did it, and we like Cat Deeley. Yeah. She's Cat Deeley, what a great woman.
I'll
find it. You carry on.
Sing.
Like that show.
What, you mean you don't want me to repeat Sing?
No.
Okay,
anyway, give us your notes.
With that show, I didn't care about the judges because there's too many of them. Now imagine 100. Yeah. 100 of these people I just don't care about.
No.
And I feel like, you know, there was just random people, a singing dentist. There's too many characters on there, particularly this guy called Paulus, who is a cabaret compere, who's basically trying to set himself up as Craig Revel Horwood.
He can jog right on. No, he can though, can't he? He was annoying.
Sing Ultima A Cappella was the name
of
the Cat Deeley fronted Sky One show that no one watched.
Did no one watch it?
I don't think so.
I like Cat Deeley. Anyway, So then the other thing is like, the concept of it, I think, is flawed because I feel that a lot of them weren't standing up because of the quality of the singing. It's because they liked the song
and
they wanted to get up and
dance
to it. So it's completely ridiculous. So like one woman sang this song, great voice, but it wasn't a catchy song. She sang it very well. And then someone was singing, like, I don't know, a Spice Girls song or whatever. And because everyone loved that song, it was a really upbeat song, they're like, oh, everyone's still on their feet.
And
it's
the
like
thing is,
completely flawed.
These
logic.
People are so ego-driven that if they were singing a song and they didn't know the words to it, they wouldn't stand up because they wouldn't be able to sing the words because they've been filmed dancing around like lunatics.
Yeah.
It's just awful.
Well, I'll tell you something I liked. I did like the element of the knockout bit. So, you know, like there's three people on the podium and then like the next person sings and then one person gets knocked out. I mean, thought that's, and they had a little counter to see if they were going to exceed the last score and everything. So I thought that was a kind of interesting device. That's going to be like with absolute disdain. But my ultimate question for you guys would be, does the world really need another singing contest?
No, of course not. I mean, I think...
By Jerry Halliwell.
Well, this is the thing. You've both forgotten the fact that the show is actually presented by Rob Beckett. And good thing about the whole ludicrous thing is Rob Beckett. And I think he does as good a job as you could possibly hope because is interviewing. So, for example, Paulus, that guy?
Yeah.
Taking the pee out of him. There's another
taking
bit. There's another guy who sets himself up. There's another guy who says, I'm the soul man or something. People call me the soul man. And Rob Beckett says, who calls you that? No one knows who you are. Yeah. And you're like, yes.
He's very funny.
The voice of the viewer. And I thought he was unashamedly blunt with these ludicrous jazz hands doofuses who make up the 100 in a very funny way. So I'm like watching it for him and he's great. And I don't think he's enough to sustain the
interest for an hour.
No.
And also the other thing about, I think he's hilarious. Like he, and he makes this a good thing.
Yeah.
However, he does say performance, which is one of my most hated things.
He says what?
Performance. You know how sometimes is that BGT or X Factor that was a beautiful performance. It's like, well, I don't understand what you're saying because it's performance.
That's like when people say, be Pacific.
Yeah. Oh, dear.
Anyway, no, but he is great.
It's weird, though, how it's a long watch. It's an hour and a half.
Boyd, I really need to know what you think about Joe Halliwell.
I think she's irritating.
She is, though, isn't she?
I met her once. I remember a couple of times. And she's incredibly... She's actually less earnest and all of that in real life.
I always think if I met her, actually, I bet she's like really nice.
She's less annoying. She's probably the least annoying member of the 100.
No, Steph.
I think so.
She is. And I should tell you why. One of my other things I noted was that because it's not just because she's very small. She gets completely lost in this 100. So when you're looking at it, you can't even say where the actual singer is. That is like the celebrated singer is.
That is like when less attractive people get even more less attractive friends to make themselves look more attractive. So you're saying that basically she, annoying Jerry Halliwell, has got more annoying people around her to make herself look more annoying. Is that what you're saying?
Same makes it less annoying.
Less annoying, I mean.
Well, I don't think it's entirely her doing. I think they've surrounded her with 99.
I think it's flawed that as well, having her so submersed in so many people. You can't spot her out.
Submersed.
I don't want to find her. I don't want to spot her. But also, the other thing that I don't like about it is, you know when they do those little fake chats?
I have to mention, because you mentioned it's an hour-long show. There's a very funny bit, which I thought was literally, I felt like I could sense whoever the executive in charge of the show is, you know, the BBC or whatever, they probably sent the first edit and they're like, they're watching it and they're going, oh. Like, after about 20 minutes, they're like, how much longer is this going on for? It's very repetitive. Obviously all singing talent shows are, but there's something, I don't know, there's something extra, feels extra. And so halfway through, they literally go, oh, let's have a break. And it's like, there's an ad break. It's on BBC One, so there is no ad break.
Yeah.
Then you watch them all kind of retire to like the general area where they chat about nothing very interesting at all. And it's quite bizarre. And Rob Beckett makes a joke that they've all gone to the toilet, which I guess some of them have.
Yeah.
It's a weird moment, isn't it, in the show where he suddenly goes, let's have a break for no other reason that it's all got a bit much, it's got a bit repetitive and annoying.
Well, but at one point, Jerry's talking about not having enough food because it must be so long to film.
Yeah, oh yeah. That's a scintillating moment where she talks about she has what?
Some hummus.
Yeah. Some hummus.
Yeah, I mean,
I'd say is if I was in charge of this show, you've got to cut that out because you've given every TV critic in the world the opportunity to say the highlight of the show is Jerry Halliwell will say she had hummus for lunch. Oh. And that is what's going to happen.
It's not
great, is it? I have to say. And I like The X Factor. I like Britain's Got Talent.
Yeah,
I like some of these shows.
Crucially, this isn't The X Factor.
Yeah.
I feel it's a weird thing about BBC attempts to do these shows. And I felt this about The Voice, and I still feel it about The Voice. It's very jazz hands, the whole thing. Not just 100, who are all jazz hands. I mean, it's like 200 jazz hands.
I don't have a problem with the jazz hands.
Oh, I do. It's just the whole tone. I mean the whole tone of it. It's very theatrical.
Do you
know what I mean?
I agree.
It's twee.
Yeah.
And for me, the great...
But sometimes that does well. What about the Andrew Lloyd Webber one?
But that was different. No,
they're really
think,
good. I love all of those.
No, I don't think those were twee. You see, that's different. No. Those were
quite
blunt.
They were actually
blunt.
Quite calm. Yeah.
Were kind of quite honest and down and dirty and blunt. And if he thought someone was terrible, they were terrible. In this, it's all very nice. It's like even the worst people who don't get any people joining in, they're all like, oh, you're still brilliant. We just didn't think. They come up with weight.
No,
it's all
but
nice.
I think there is a market for that because we don't always need Simon Cowell just being really horrible. To
no,
know
you want
what
honesty.
I mean.
Yeah,
you
no, not
honesty.
When you've got Paulus.
Yeah, it's too, no, it's too, it's awful. Too. Yeah, Paulus is trying to be blunt in a very affected, self-conscious way. I thought the whole thing was very theatrical, very contrived. That's annoyed me.
Yeah, I don't.
I think
it's going to be flop.
I don't think it's going to be a massive hit.
And 50 grand. I mean, that's how much they don't believe in the people they're going to get on the show. They're not even offering them the recording contract or anything. Just saying, no, you have 50
I'll take 50 though.
I mean, God, yes, please, thank you. But
50 and a croissant.
That's all she wants, croissant. Yeah. 50 grand's worth of croissants.
I want to reiterate that Rob Beckett does a good job though.
He does.
Oh, yeah,
he's valiant.
As you said, he is the best thing about this.
He is working in very harsh conditions, and he does. He weathers it very well.
It's a great performance from him.
Great performance. All Together Now starts on BBC One next Saturday at the time of 7:15, I think, off the top of my head. And clearly, you may decide that it's much better than we think it is. How many stars are you going to give it, Steph?
Two.
It's a five from me. No, it's a two.
Yeah, I think it's got to be two as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was very sorry, but what can you do? Finally, it's that time.
It's question time. John hates us more and more.
I think it's been a grueling episode for
us
to listen to, hasn't it?
John,
for
us more than
anything. But let me ask him. He's here. John, has it been a grueling episode for you?
He's done
not
so
denial.
So
not a denial.
Wow.
Yeah. Ooh. I don't feel after this episode he's going to go, right, sit me down and show me All Together Now. Now.
I'm going, that's not our fault. We didn't make the show.
I know, but even probably sitting through a discussion of it is probably
fine.
Fine. the question is this week, built around Requiem, which is, as I've said, a horror film, horror TV drama, what is your favourite spooky TV or film thing?
Right.
I'm turning to Stephanie Seelan first.
But looking at me, which is confusing.
Well, because I know sometimes Kay hasn't prepared an answer to the question.
Right, Kay, get on the Google.
Well, specifically when they're not geared towards me. Yes, you're right. Yeah.
Right, Boyd, you can actually help me out with this one. What I'm going to talk about now is the thing that when I was a little girl and my family watched Doctor Who,
yeah.
it absolutely terrified me. Yeah. Okay. And to this day, the thought of these things really scares me. Okay. Wow. Now, God, and sometimes I've explained this to people and they're like, oh no, those things didn't exist. I'm like, no, they did. Right. They were, I believe they were called tripods. They were like huge metal, long, they had really long metal legs, and there were little pods on the top, and they used to come through the forest in Doctor Who.
I'm going to Google it.
And they, now
do you mean when you were younger or recently?
No, when I was younger.
New Doctor Who.
Oh, really, really old Doctor Who.
Do you remember who the Doctor was? John Pertwee or Tom Baker or Peter Davison?
I think it was Peter Davison.
Mm, okay.
Can you look at that? The most scary, to me, still, that is the most scary thing to me.
Right.
It used to terrify me.
They sound very similar to the ones in War of the Worlds.
Yeah, they're a bit like that, right. But they're
that stuff.
Yeah, it's that. Oh, it is that. It's exactly that. What is it called?
The tripods.
Yeah.
The tripods.
Yeah, I knew you didn't make it up. It's definitely, yeah.
Well, when did they run? When did they run?
Okay.
Oh, God, it's honestly.
The tripods, look.
Yes, scary. Aren't they frightening?
Oh, no, but that's its own series, though. The tripods was its own series.
What?
Yeah. There was a series called Tripods, which...
But were they in Doctor Who?
It was in that slot, but it wasn't actually on Doctor Who. But I think there were tripod-style things on Doctor Who, but there was a show actually called Tripods, yeah. Yeah. Believe it or not. Yeah.
Anyway.
The tripods. Oh, you didn't get confused because it was on at the same time as Doctor
Maybe,
Who?
But don't Google it because it's really terrifying.
Don't
they
Google
are,
it.
They are. They're scary. That's the thing that used to terrify me as a child. In later life, I don't think I've found anything hugely as terrifying as that.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Wow, that's a great answer.
When I think of the thing that scared me the most, it's still that.
Wow. Oh, is that the... Oh, okay.
Is that the question? Is that what you're going to say? Is that the question?
Yeah.
That is the question.
What scared you most? No, I thought it was spooky, so that's
It is spooky TV or film, but then Boyd said
things. Yeah, spooky.
Things,
no, so. it can be anything that you find scary,
So we're talking childhood traumas.
Yeah,
okay,
but
fine.
No, not necessarily. It can be childhood, be
just
whatever.
When I think of scary, that's what I think of.
Anything right. Scary. Kay, go ahead.
Well, two things then from childhood you scare me. One was Jaws, the baddie from Bond.
Oh, that's a good one.
With the
scary.
Silver teeth.
Oh, yeah.
He was terrifying. And he was in at least two of the films, so I was like...
He came to my university ball.
Really?
Yeah.
As your date?
As a feature. Yeah, he did. And what?
As a feature?
As like a feature person. Yeah.
Well, like a star guest.
Yeah.
Wow. That's
him
brilliant.
And a big snake. Those were the two things, yeah.
What, wrapped around his neck or were they separate?
No, somebody else had the snake and he came as well.
Jaws and a snake. Yeah. Richard Keel is the name of the actor.
Yeah, he was there.
There's a brilliant shot. Funnily enough, there was a brilliant shot that someone tweeted this week of him on the set of The Spy Who Loved Me with his wife, I think, and their little baby. And it was really sweet. So you saw Jaws, the scary Jaws.
See, I wouldn't be scared of that if I saw him with a baby. Obviously, but, you know, with those silver teeth coming at you. Okay, and this other thing I was scared of as a kid was, you know, in Superman, the trio of baddies in their black outfits. What were they? Who were they called?
I've just remembered the other thing that used to scare the absolute pants off me. Do you remember from Return to Oz, the Wheelies?
Oh, no, I don't like Return to Oz.
But do you no, that
General
wasn't the question.
Zod yes, and his General henchmen, yes. Played by the legendary Terrence Stamp. Yeah.
Yeah.
But terrifying. Boyd, the Wheelies. Do you remember them?
I don't remember the Wheelies, no.
Oh, they were like... half people on wheels in Return to Oz.
Do you know what? Actually, the Flying Monkeys and the Wizard of Oz are pretty.
Yeah, Oz is a source of much fear.
Anyway, Boyd, what are you scared of? Nothing.
No, I wouldn't say that.
You fear nothing.
No, that's not true. No, well, since you've both gone for kind of stuff you were scared of when you were little, I'll go for that as well. There's a show called Thriller on ITV.
When was that on?
It was on in the 70s. This is how old I am. Yeah. And it was created by Brian Clemens, who was a brilliant writer, and he wrote the Avengers, you know, the original Avengers.
Series,
you know, he was responsible for those Persuaders. He created a lot or co-wrote a lot of brilliant 60s, 70s TV, fantastic stuff. And Thriller was one of the first. It was the forerunner of Black Mirror.
No.
So Thriller was a completely different story each week. It was an anthology series. It ran from 1973 to 1976. And they were effing terrifying. And they ran the gamut from, it might be a kind of twist in the tail style thing, like Black Mirror. It might be a kind of supernatural. It might be a ghost story. Mm. It might be...
Were you old enough to be watching it?
Yeah, I was like I was like, you know, at 7, 8, 9, 10. Yeah.
Oh, that's
you know,
too that young.
That's too young. No, boys. No, 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 no. You traumatized
yourself. No, I loved it. But it helped establish my love of horror stuff, of frightening stuff. There is a, you know, the pleasure you get in being scared, if you like.
I mean, I don't like it.
I don't. No, I don't.
But although.
But I think you can get them on DVD. And I really want to go back. I keep saying to myself, I've got to go back and watch Thriller and to see how brilliant it was. It was a phenomenal series. And it's had a big influence on Instant Number 9, for example. It kind of has a big influence on that Ghostwatch thing, because that Ghostwatch feels like a kind of episode of Thriller.
The Ghostwatch
which is done in documentary style. Yeah.
No, the Ghostwatch documentary.
Yeah.
Anyway, you can't watch that because you've got to watch all the rest of Alt Carbon first, haven't you? Altered Carbon, should I say?
What did you call it? Alt Carbon.
Alt Carbon.
Alt Carbon.
Alt Carbon.
It's possibly a better title for it.
I know, it actually would.
Yeah.
They should have
yeah.
come to me.
Well,
anyway.
I think we've truly torn the week's pop cultural highlights to pieces.
John
apart
is
from
sinking in his chair through despair.
So what that means is it's time to say goodbye from me.
It's goodbye from me.
And it's goodbye from me.
And we'll see you next week.
Please review us.
Bye. Bye.